Those of us who are believers in Jesus Christ look on the world in a completely different way from how we did before we came to be believers in Jesus Christ. And we recognize in a way now that we could not recognize before that this world has a problem with God. Now, that's really the issue. And we see it now because that's what we were before we were redeemed. And now we know it wasn't all of those things we tried to excuse our behavior by, but we actually had a problem with God. We were His enemies. We might have blamed our trouble on many different things, made any number of excuses. We might have hidden our motives behind a thin veneer of moralism or religious works. But in reality, we were fighting against God. All of our lives were lived at that time in opposition to God. We had a problem with Him. Once, by His grace, we came to understand that that was the situation, then our hearts were changed and we saw very clearly we were His enemies. We hated that, and we hated that we had offended Him, and we were changed from the inside out. And then we saw it for what it was. It was rebellion against Him. We had resented, the whole time that we were lost, we had resented His sovereign rule and power over our lives. We wanted to rule in His place. And that desire on our part as sinners before we were redeemed to rule in God's place, that was the source of our problem with God. We didn't like that He was God and that we were not. And it drove us to deeper rebellion against Him. So we made excuses and we thought we were justified and we were sure that we were the ones who were right. And until God's intervention by His grace, we could not see that we were His enemies and that that was the problem. We know what the world is doing because we did it until the very moment God changed our hearts. We did it. What's interesting is that now that God has changed our hearts, those of us who are Christians, now that we have been transformed and we have seen that enmity with God for what it is now, we still do it. It's different now because now we're not objects of His wrath, but we still do it. We have been redeemed, so it is different. We've been changed from the inside out, so it's not the kind of enmity we had before. We're never going to be His enemies, and yet we still have a problem with God. And we still pretend it's not that. And so we make our excuses and we point our fingers in blame at everything else. Maybe if you're a brand new Christian, you don't realize this yet. If you've been a Christian just a little longer, you know what I'm talking about. It is entirely possible for a believer who has been genuinely changed by a work of God's grace to be absolutely frustrated with God, to resent the way that God is working in your life, to chafe under unpleasant circumstances and blame God for the trouble, to have a horrible attitude and think yourself justified. In fact, that's common among believers, isn't it? Some of us get there and then just stay and stay and stay. Now, as we have studied in this hour, the book of Job, now for many weeks, we've seen a lot of interaction between Job and his three friends. And all the while, they're talking about God and what He's like and about the world and what it's like and about sin and its consequences and punishment of it. The text that we have for today is a little bit different. Eliphaz has just spoken. We're in the very middle of the book now. Everybody's already said pretty much everything they can think of to say, and now they're just going over it again, but with more intensity It's more combative than it was. Eliphaz just finished in the text we looked at last time I was here. And he hashed through the same stuff again. Now Job replies in the next two chapters of the book that we're going to look at today. Chapters 23 and 24. Job replies. But he only uses one line right at the first of these two chapters to reply directly to what Eliphaz has said. Just one line. And then one line right at the end of these two chapters to reply to all three of the guys and say, okay, so tell me now what you think. And everything in between for two chapters is Job complaining about the way it is. These two chapters show us a believer who is frustrated with his circumstances, frustrated with other people, frustrated with God Himself for letting it be this way. They give us a good example of what it looks like when a genuine believer has a problem with God. It tends to follow this pattern. And you may find that the arguments here are just a little too familiar to be comfortable. I'll give you that warning up front. It's a little unsettling to realize what Job is saying and what you were thinking. You may recognize this as something that you're a little too susceptible to. And it's possible that even right now, if you're discontented, if you're frustrated, if your heart is troubled, that this is the problem. It may be that even this moment, many people in this room are right where Job is in these two chapters. But it's important to understand that Job is a believer. He is redeemed. God has declared him to be the most righteous man alive in his generation. He did that in chapter 1. He did it again in chapter 2. Job is the good guy. He's the best of his time. And yet Job is susceptible to this problem. So if you look at what is in the bulk of these two chapters and think, man, that stings a little bit. What are you bringing that at me for? Just understand, if Job was susceptible, all of us are. Every one of us. And it's important to see this for what it is, because only then can we have freedom from it and victory over it. So we're going to look at this example, and then we're going to talk a little bit about how to get past this point. Because every believer in this room has been here. And many may even be here right now, today, at various levels of discontentment and frustration with God. Well, let's start with chapter 23, verses 1 and 2. It says, then Job replied, even today my complaint is rebellion. His hand is heavy despite my groaning. Now this is Job's reply to Eliphaz. This is all he says to that stuff we looked at last time that Eliphaz was proclaiming. His friend had offered nothing new in this last speech. He had just become more combative, going over the same turf again. And this is Job's groaning reply. It's sarcastic. It's an expression of frustration with his friend. He says, even today it's the same story, because this thing has gone on for days and days. Same song, different day. That's what he's saying to Eliphaz. Don't you have anything new? Is it still all my fault? You haven't answered anything that I said. You haven't backed up the points that you are making. You just keep the same mantra. It's your fault, Job, and if you'd follow this list, everything would be wonderful. And Job says, yeah, yeah, yeah. Same story, different day. You've got nothing to help me. After that, though, Job begins to complain. And as he complains, he's still talking to these guys, but there's more to it than that. He's complaining to God. He's expressing his frustration with God to his friends, and specifically about the way that God is dealing in Job's life. Pick up again with chapter 23, verse 3. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat. I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would learn the words which he would answer and perceive what he would say to me. Would he contend with me by the greatness of his power? No, surely he would pay attention to me. There the upright would reason with him, and I would be delivered forever from my judge. Behold, I go forward, and he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. When he acts on the left, I cannot behold him. He turns to the right, I cannot see him, but he knows the way I take. When he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. And there's an expression of confidence right in the middle of all of this, complaining. Verse 11, my foot has held fast to his path. I have kept his way and not turned aside. I have not departed from the command of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. But he is unique, and who can turn him? And what his soul desires, that he does. For he performs what is appointed for me, and many such decrees are with him. Therefore, I would be dismayed at his presence when I consider I am terrified of him. It is God who has made my heart faint, and the Almighty who has dismayed me. But I am not silenced by the darkness, nor deep gloom which covers me. And verse 1 of chapter 24, why are times not stored up by the Almighty, and why do those who know him not see his days? Now this is what it looks like when a genuine believer has a problem with God. What you're seeing here is a creature, a created being, who does not like his status as a creature. He doesn't like the fact that he can't get to God. He can't make God answer him. He can't control the Almighty, and he's frustrated with that fact. He wants to go to God and present his case, and he's upset that God won't go along with that plan. Now, this is like some other passages we've read earlier in the book where you scratch your head and go, whoa, Joe, I believe you're saying that, man. Job's a bit more honest than most of us care to be. God gives us an extreme example in this guy. Not just extreme suffering, but also extreme honesty. He's very forthright about what he feels and about what he thinks. And Job says what he's really thinking, and the rest of us think first, wow, I can't believe he said that. And then if we think about it a little longer, we go, I was thinking that too. I just didn't want to face it. And so God gives us this intense example to help us see what's in our own hearts. You hear Job say it and it startles you, and then you realize, wait a minute, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's not a very pretty picture, though. Here's a man who actually believes that he should be able to contend with God, and he's upset that God's not going along with that. He thinks he's capable of discussing weighty issues with God, that he has some points that God maybe hasn't considered yet, and that if he had a chance to make his case before God, that he's going to move God off of this problem and get a new situation that he's longing for. He's going to be able to prove to God why his way is better, and he thinks God's going to adjust to him. Looking at verses 3 and 4 of chapter 23. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat. I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. He's like, I have got a lot to say to him, and I can't find him, and that's bothering me. I would fill my mouth with arguments. Not just one or two things. And he thinks if he could make his case, God would be forced to see the light. Verse 7, he says, there the upright would reason with him, and I would be delivered forever from my judge. If I could just get to him and explain it to him, he would adjust to me and I could have my way. Job is very frustrated with his status as a creature. In verse 8 and verse 9, he says, "Behold, I go forward, but he's not there. Backward, but I cannot perceive him. When he acts on the left, I cannot behold him. He turns to the right, I cannot see him." He thinks it would be better if God were more like him so that he could see where God is moving, what God is doing, so that he could perceive and go to him and talk to him and make him understand. Now, that frustration that Job feels and that every one of us can relate to more than we want to admit to each other this morning, that frustration is made even more pointed by the fact that Job knows he has lived a godly life. He knows. Without thinking he approached sinless perfection, he knows he's been a much better person, much more godly, much more sincere than most of the people around him. So in verse 10, he says, "But he knows the way I take. When he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold." He knows he's been made righteous. Verse 11, "My foot has held fast to his path. I have kept his way and not turned aside." Verse 12, "I have not departed from the command of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food." Job isn't just tooting his own horn. He's right. He's a godly man. Not perfect, as you can tell from this passage, but a godly man. He knows he's lived a good life. God himself has testified to that fact in the first two chapters. And so we know that he's not just exalting himself in some undue way. He's really done this. So Job's mistake is not in recognizing that he's lived a righteous kind of life. His mistake is in thinking that he could dictate to God what the reward for that is and when it would come. That's why he's bringing this up. He's not content to wait until later. He's not content to suffer without understanding why he's suffering, trusting that God will reward him in eternity. And that's that's true even though Job has already said that he knows he's going to get a reward in eternity. He's not upset about that. He's upset that he's not getting it right now. And like the fact that this is going on so long and that he can't change it. He wants what he wants, and he wants it now. And if he can't have it, he wants an explanation. Tell me why not. Now this attitude finally leads him to accuse God. Look at verse 13, down through verse 16. "But he is unique, and who can turn him? And what his soul desires, that he does. For he performs what is appointed for me, and many such decrees are with him. Therefore I would be dismayed at his presence. When I consider, I'm terrified of him." Verse 16, "It is God who has made my heart faint, and the Almighty who has dismayed me." He's saying, it's all God's fault. Not only did he make me sick and poor and bereaved, but he's made my heart faint. The inner problem, Job blames on God too. I'm dismayed on the inside. Those are inner things. He's saying, that's God's fault. And Job's attitude leads him to insist even more strongly on having his own way and continuing to ask why. In verse 17 and verse 1 of chapter 24, "But I am not silenced by the darkness nor deep gloom which covers me." He's like, I'm not going to shut up, even though it's bad. Verse 1 of chapter 24, "Why are times not stored up for the Almighty? And why do those who know him not see his days? Why is it like this? I don't like this. You need to explain it to me, God, because I don't like it." Now, at the bottom of all of this kind of complaining and striving against God, there is the attitude, I am right and God is wrong and this isn't fair. That's what he's saying. I should be in charge. God should do what I say. He's doing it wrong, and he should listen to me. Now, as believers, we make lots and lots of excuses, just like we made when we were unbelievers and we were at enmity with God. Even as believers, you know, it's not my fault. It's because this happened. It's the circumstances. It's that other person. We have a lot of ways to to try and justify ourselves, to say that God is wrong and I am right. Now, in the rest of chapter 24, Job continues to accuse God and justify himself. But now he invokes another very popular technique in trying to justify himself. He starts comparing himself to other people. Starting with chapter 24, verse 2. Some remove the landmarks. They seize and devour flocks. They drive away the donkeys of the orphans. They take the widow's ox for a pledge. They push the needy aside from the road. The poor of the land are made to hide themselves altogether. Behold, as wild donkeys in the wilderness, they go forth seeking food in their activity, as bread for their children in the desert. They harvest their fodder in the field and glean the vineyard of the wicked. They spend the night naked without clothing and have no covering against the cold. They are wet with the mountain rains and hug the rock for want of shelter. So he's saying some people do this to the poor so that they're hugging a rock to try to get warm. Verse 9, others snatch the orphan from the breast and against the poor. They take a pledge. They cause the poor to go about naked without clothing, and they take away the sheaves from the hungry. Within the walls they produce oil. They tread wine presses but thirst. From the city, men groan and the souls of the wounded cry out, yet God does not pay attention to folly. Others have been with those who rebel against the light. They do not want to know its ways nor abide by its paths. The murderer rises at dawn and kills the poor and the needy, and at night he is a thief. The eye of the adulterer waits for the twilight, saying, no eye will see me, and he disguises his face. In the dark, they dig into houses. They shut themselves up by day. They do not know the light, for the morning is the same to them as thick darkness. For he is familiar with the terrors of thick darkness. They are insignificant on the surface of the waters. Their portion is cursed on the earth. They do not turn toward the vineyards. Drought and heat consume the snow waters. So does Sheol those who have sinned. A mother will forget him. The worm feeds sweetly until he is no longer remembered, and wickedness will be broken like a tree. He wrongs the barren woman and does no good to the widow, but he drags off the valiant by his power. He rises, but no one has assurance of life. He provides them with security, and they are supported, and his eyes are on their ways. They are exalted a little while, then they are gone. Moreover, they are brought low and like everything gathered up, even like the heads of grain, they are cut off. Now, Job is saying some stuff that is obviously true. He's saying there are some really bad people in this world, and God hasn't stopped it. That's true. There are people who do really bad things, and those people are worse than Job. That's what he's saying. That much is true. But then if you take the whole package and you think about why is Job bringing this up, the point that he's trying to make is not true. Because he's complaining against God as he says these things. Now, why is he rehearsing the fact that there are bad people in the world who go temporarily unpunished? Why does he bring that up for a whole chapter? It's not just that he has discernment and all of a sudden he notices that there are bad people in the world. He's complaining against God. And Job is making the classic human mistake of trying to justify himself by leveraging off some other person and saying, well, he's worse than I am, therefore. He's also trying to judge God's actions by some short-term human measure. There are people in this world who are worse than I am, and I've been a good guy, and I should get this for my trouble. I've served faithfully, and they're not serving faithfully. I should get what I want. They seem to have what they want. I don't like this. there really are some bad people in this world. And Job really had been righteous. The bad people really were comfortable, and Job really was suffering. But the conclusion that he was driving at with this is not true. Now, you have to be awfully careful because you have the same kind of heart just as I have. So think about this. The fact that there are people in this world who are evil does not excuse you of a failure to trust God. That's what Job is trying to say. I shouldn't have to trust him because there are bad people in the world. The fact that there are evil people in the world doesn't excuse you from trusting the God who saved you. The terrible things that happen in this world do not mean that God has to defend himself to you. That's what Job was saying. He's looking around at the world saying, God, you got some explaining to do to me. That's not right. That part's not true. Yeah, there are problems in the world, but God is working a purpose and he doesn't have to explain it to you. Now, if you've ever fought against God in this way, as a believer, which if you're a believer, I'm pretty sure you have, you know. This is a miserable place to be, where Job is right now. There's no contentment. There's no peace. And the cycle just continues, doesn't it? The more you scream out and demand answers from God, the more frustrated you get, and it just goes on and on and on. Job ends this particular talk with a challenge. Look at chapter 24, verse 25. He's speaking to the three friends who are sitting there with him. Now, if it is not so, who can prove me a liar and make my speech worthless? He's laying down the gauntlet. Prove me wrong if I'm not right. Give me the answer that will shut my mouth if you think this isn't how it is. Now, this may be more of the self-justification coming through that we've all done, or it might be a desperate cry for help. You know, I've reached the point of frustration. I really would like to hear the answer if anybody has one. Yeah, and it could be both of those. Somebody prove me wrong. Unfortunately, Job's three friends were not capable of meeting that challenge, and so he languishes in this predicament for quite a while more. But the Bible does answer this challenge. The Bible does prove him wrong and tells him what to do. And when we have this attitude, it proves us wrong and tells us what to do instead. The Bible answers this challenge. And it teaches that it is not necessary for believers to endure this kind of self-induced misery in which we have a problem with God. The Bible does answer the dilemma, but first it's very important to define the dilemma. It's important to get our minds around exactly what's going on here at the root of this. And what is happening is Job is fighting against the sovereignty of God. Now, sovereignty is a big word. It means I'm the boss. Kids, you got that? It's an easy word, really. Sovereignty. It means you're not the boss of me. If you say that, that means you think you're sovereign. That's why you call a king the sovereign. He's in charge. Whoever's in charge is sovereign. Job is fighting against the fact that God is in charge. He's frustrated with the fact that God is God and Job is not God. He doesn't like the fact that God is acting according to his own purpose and that God isn't asking anyone for input and that God is not going to be interviewed or judged by any of his creatures. That's the problem. Job has a problem with God functioning as God. He's incensed that God is actually using his divine will in Job's life. can't believe that God is working God's purpose instead of Job's purpose in Job's life. He doesn't want to be the creature. He doesn't want God to be the God. And the reason it all looks so familiar to you and me is because this is how our hearts are. And the reason the frustration just continues and the cycle just gets worse and worse is because you can't change the fact that God is God. Fighting against it isn't going to get you where you want to be. Can you realize that it would be wrong for God to act in any other way? It would be wrong for Him not to be sovereign, not to act according to His own purpose? The solution is not in fighting. In fact, the only solution to this problem is for the creature to stop fighting. The creature who is fighting has to stop fighting. We have to embrace our status as created beings. We're not God. We'll never be God. We're never going to be happy when we try to be God. And then we can learn to rejoice in God's sovereignty. That's the other end of the spectrum. That's the antithesis of where Job is. Job is chafing under God's sovereignty. The solution is to rejoice under God's sovereignty. To delight in the fact that God functions as God instead of fighting against it. So it's a good question to ask yourself as you think about how painfully familiar some of these lines might be to you. Can you rejoice in the sovereignty of God? Can your heart actually take great delight in the fact that God is the boss of you? All the time, without exception. Can you rejoice even when things don't go the way you had hoped? In fact, let me ask it this way. Does the fact that God is in absolute control of your life and will not be interviewed by you enhance your worship? Does the fact that He is God and He functions as God and He applies His free will in your life without asking you why lead you to the very heights of worship? Because when it does, you won't be frustrated anymore with your status of as a creature. That's the solution. Can your heart say what the psalmist said in Psalm 21:13? Listen to these words. Be exalted, O Lord, in your strength. We will sing and praise your power. Whose power is Job wanting to praise in these two chapters? And he's frustrated because he can't, because he doesn't have any power. Can your heart say, in the middle of all of your problems, we will sing and praise your power? Or maybe think about the words of Psalm 103, verses 19 through 22. Does your heart resonate with these words? The Lord has established His throne in the heavens, and His sovereignty rules over all. Bless the Lord, you His angels, mighty in strength, who perform His word, obeying the voice of His word. Bless the Lord, all you His hosts, you who serve Him, doing His will. Bless the Lord, all you works of His, in all places of His dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul. His dominion. Can you worship that way in your pain? Can you worship that way facing disappointment, undergoing suffering, dealing with persecution? Can you rejoice in that way as you let go of that favorite dream that you now realize is never going to happen in your life? That's the solution to the striving that we have seen in this morning's example. You must learn to rejoice in God as God. Now, Job eventually got there. It took him a while because his three friends weren't any help, and the cycle went on for some more. But he got there. And so once we grasp what the problem is, that the problem, when a Christian has a problem with God, it's a sovereignty issue. When we're frustrated and we can't be content and we're always upset and we're complaining against God, it's His sovereignty we're fighting against. And once we understand that and see that we need to learn to rejoice in it, then the next step is to make the change. What do you do? Well, it's important to realize that a small adjustment is not what is called for. Job had to forsake his whole way of thinking as a believer and establish a new way of thinking as a believer. And when a believer is striving against God, it's that way. It's drastic. You don't need a nudge. You need a radical change in the way you think. Here's how it happened to Job. Look with me at chapter 42 of this book, verses 1 through 6. Job 42, 1 through 6. This is what we're resisting when we have a problem with God, but this is what we must do to get over our problem with God. Job chapter 42, verses 1 through 6. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have declared that which I did not understand, things too wonderful for me which I did not know. Hear now and I will speak. I will ask you and you instruct me. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I retract and I repent in dust and ashes. That's what we're resisting as we continue to be frustrated. We want a self-help book. We don't want repentance. But if we're fighting against God as God, if we're resisting His sovereign right to rule our lives, repentance is what's called for. A radical change of thinking in which we forsake that attitude of pursuing our own power and our own rights, which we don't really have, and we bow before our Creator. It's a radical adjustment. Now, the irony is, when we finally make that change and bow, all of those blessings that we couldn't get before come to us in abundance. We have joy in our hearts. We learn contentment. You might not get the specific material things you were striving after, but your heart will be happy, and that's what you thought that stuff was going to get you, right? This is what we resist because it looks so bad, and yet bowing before our Creator, and honoring Him as our ruler is where our joy and contentment come from. So Job makes the radical adjustment. He said, I thought I knew some things, but now I see, and I retract, and I repent in dust and ashes. He recognized that God was God. And he bowed. That's what we have to do. And when we do, then we can rejoice in the fact that God is sovereign. He'll do more to enhance your worship than anything else you can ever do. Because then you realize how worthy He is of worship. He alone knows how to bring your life to where it should be. He alone knows. When you recognize His right and His wisdom as God, you can worship. You can bow. You can be content. So Job gives us a great example of how not to do it. And then of what to do to fix it. Retract and repent. Let's bow in prayer.